Welcome to another episode of Torah Podcast. On the podcast today, we got Chris.
How's it going, man? Life is great, brother. Can't complain. How about you?
Good. Just bring this closer to you.
Sounds good.
Maybe lay a fist away.
All right.
Yep.
We're good?
Yep.
Perfect. So yeah, man.
What's new, man?
Just living life, you know, training a lot more. Was at PT this morning. Had a little bit of a back issue not too long back, but getting back to training, hopefully compete around maybe late March, April, sometime soon. Definitely want to do the Jersey Open at some point. My first IBJJF didn't go the way I wanted it to, obviously. Yeah, but
same with mine.
Yeah, so is what it is. Just got to, you know, put hammer to the road, all that type of stuff. Girlfriend's getting me up early more often, so I actually now have to start utilizing that to go to the gym a little bit more instead of just going right before class.
Yeah.
Which is always what I usually do. I love going to the gym, getting a run in before class. As much as I may complain about, like, how I feel, you know, it's always good to get that, like, hard workout in. I think always sometimes for me beforehand and then going to train. So that way you're already kind of warmed up-ish, even though, like, running is obviously different than jiu-jitsu.
But yeah.
I still feel always I feel a little bit more looser than if I just go to jiu-jitsu, have to do a first round, and then go to, like, all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
First round is always pretty rough, in my personal opinion, because it's like you're going in to, like, a first one, so feeling like that type of deal.
Quick background here, backtrack here. Chris here is a purple belt at Movement Art, and just a hard worker all overall. No matter what open mat you go to, you just find this guy. Trains every day of the week, it seems like.
Try to train as much as I can.
Yeah, same, man.
Exactly.
As much as you can. That's all you can do, man.
Yeah, and you're at a bunch of open mats, too. I see you coming out the Jersey as well.
Yeah, try to, man.
Very hardworking guy. You know, you're because you're like an engineer, right?
Software.
Yeah. You have a hard job as well. You work hard, too, and you're making it in. Like, a lot of people, we were talking about this earlier, there's a lot of people who work in those type of office jobs. Like, I have an office job myself, but a lot of those people, they'll go out and drink a lot, and they'll go to those happy hours all the time, and they're not putting that time to an actual use. You know, they always complain, like, oh, I got kids, I got this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though I might not have kids myself, they at least find that time that they don't have with them to do something productive.
Yeah.
A lot of them don't do that, and you're someone who's a good example that does.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's more just, you know, like, understanding what the number one priority is, right? For me, is my family.
Mm-hmm.
So spending time with them, spending time with the kids, you know, is definitely up there. But then right after that, it's like, you know, or side by side, it's taking care of yourself, right?
Mm-hmm. It's also developing those good values, too. Because I think all martial arts install, like, that value, whether it's, you know, you go to Taekwondo, like I had a Taekwondo background when you're a young kid learning that discipline, or whether it's keeping yourself accountable on the mats, because the one thing about jiu-jitsu, unlike any other martial art that, or maybe wrestling, you can compare that to, is the skill is going to show either way.
Yeah.
Like, if you haven't been really working hard, it's going to show in your cardio and your technique and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, is just one, taking care of myself, you know, physically and all this stuff. Another one, it really helps me, you know, block everything out of my life and focus on just that one thing. I mean, I've talked about it many times about on the podcast, but yeah. And then three is setting a good example, right? Like, if I want my son to do this, which I do, and he does, it's like setting a good example of, like, you know, you're not, I don't just want you to do this. I want you to emulate what you see in life, right?
And having those good role models like you for your son, and especially like Nick and Danny. I can't tell you, because I've been around the block when it comes to jiu-jitsu. I'm not going to name any names here, but I've been to a plethora of jiu-jitsu schools where one of the biggest lies you'll hear in jiu-jitsu is no ego.
Mm-hmm.
Jiu-jitsu, and I even fall into this myself, is one of the most egotistical sports I've ever seen. Because it's one or the other. Like, you'll meet people who either are, like, the most humble, most nice, and then you'll meet people who wear that black belt as if they're a god amongst men.
Yeah.
And those are the people I detest the most, because it's like, you know, lack of a better term, pardon if I use a little bit of if I use some profanity here, it's like you also piss and shit like I do.
Yeah.
Right? And one of the things I hate the most is obviously you want to have that respect for your instructor, but if you're just going to trot around your belt and trot around your rank like you're a god, mm-hmm. but some, you know, blue belt comes in and ends up beating that black belt coach, it's not a good look. You know what I mean? Yeah. Now, I'm not saying this has happened personally or anything like that, but it's just that mentality of seeing yourself above other people because you, even though, yeah, you put the time in, did you really put that effort in? Because one of the things I know we talk about in movement art a lot is upgrading your programming, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want to stick at Windows 95. Windows 95 was great and did set the standard for all PCs in general. Mm-hmm. But it ain't going to be operating the same, bro. You know what I mean? We don't got that dial-up going around. Like, you know, you don't have to shut off all the phones to go on the internet and hear the...
Yeah.
I still remember the sound. Remember that sound?
100%, man. Dude, I'm older than you are, man.
Yeah, that's true. See, it's funny because, like, even though I'm, like, in my late 20s, I still remember, like, my mom having one of those, like, old brick phones.
Yeah.
Like, it literally looks like you probably could just write a note on top of it, chuck it through a window, and that you probably get better reception doing it that way than actually dialing the number in the thing.
Yeah, man.
But, yeah.
Dude, definitely. I think, you know, we're very lucky to have the coaches that we have. Definitely, jiu-jitsu, it's like an evolving sport, and, you know, you have to keep up with it.
Absolutely.
That's the only way to only get better. But not everybody cares about that, you know. And that's all right. You know, they can do them. We can do us, right?
Absolutely.
Like that's the beautiful thing about it. But yeah, having no ego. I talked to Nick about this, you know, and I was like, you know, for a sport that really kind of like gets you to, you know, put away your ego and like put your ego in check. It's definitely, you know, very egotistical, especially at the higher levels. You know,
oh, yeah.
And especially when it comes to competing and all
that
stuff.
Well, you have to be. You have to have a certain level of narcissism in yourself.
There's a difference, though. Like, narcissism is different than being selfish. Selfish is, like, there's good to selfishness, right? In my eyes, there's you have to have this level of selfishness in order to get better at something or just take care of yourself. Right? Because you cannot take care of others unless you take care of yourself. That's my viewpoint of that. Where narcissism or like egotistical, like, are different things that are not good. Right.
I think I didn't use the right word there. Selfishness, but I think another word that you can use is solipsism.
Okay. Explain that.
It's a good one. So solipsism is seeing almost like putting yourself at like you being your own main character type of deal. Like, it could have positive ramifications and negative ramifications. So one thing, I'll give an example in a negative way, right? Mm-hmm. So a negative way would be like if you were to say, get into an argument and say, well, as a person with Asperger's like myself, if I were to say as a person with autism, you know, or something like that, you're putting yourself representing everyone else. But at the same time, when you're in that mentality, when you're training, you kind of have to be that way. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you're the one who has to cut the weight. You're the one that has to, you know, go through all that. You're the one that has to get those hard rounds. I mean, a really, really good person who knows what that intensity is like is Danny.
Yeah.
Danny and both Danny and Nick, but Danny, when he's cutting that weight and you're rolling with him, you can feel his soul in every single move.
Yeah.
And it is painful. But he does it for a reason. It's because he's putting on that switch. Like, it's either me or you.
Yeah.
And you need that. You need that switch in you. And, you know, I strive to have that. But do I have that in the end? I don't even know myself.
It's very hard. I mean, like, Danny brought me this book that's amazing, Grit, right? And, like, in a couple of days, I knocked it out, right? And throughout the whole book, you're thinking, like, do I have grit? No, I don't have grit. Maybe I do, you know, and it's like this kind of battle that as you're reading and as the person is like describing what this grit is, it's not like zero or one. You either have it or you don't. No, there's like levels to this, right? And the other piece of it is like, okay, well, somebody who has grit, you know, starts and ends something. Somebody who has grit, you know, may be the person that gets on, the treadmill and outdoes you, right? Like basically stays there the longest, right? But it's not so much that. Maybe it's not the person who stays there the longest. Maybe it's the person who comes back the next day and the next day and the next day, right? So you're like, oh, I do have it because I do that with this or I do that with that, right? Mm-hmm. But then it's like, then it starts talking about like, well, the person who has grit is the person who starts a goal and finishes. And it's like, man, there's so many projects that I started that I never finished.
Oh, yeah,
and that's part of like, you know, you can call it ADHD, you can call it whatever you want, label it however you want. It's like, man. And then it goes into, well, that might be a good thing because if you didn't quit that, then maybe you wouldn't have found the true thing that you're passionate about, right?
Yeah,
so you have this battle within yourself, like, do I have it? Do I don't? At the end of the day, it's like, man, do I want to keep doing this? Do I want to keep showing up for myself? Do I want to keep showing up to do this? It's like, if the answer is yes, like, man. And I see you as like somebody with like that grit, right? Like I see you as like somebody who's not only there every time I go to the gym, but every time like on Instagram and seeing you put in that work at the gym. And,
I try.
You know, like it's definitely like, you know, respectful the amount of work that you put in. So as much as like, you know, you're looking out and, you know, sometimes like when we see our neighbors or somebody on Instagram or, you know, somebody as high level as like Nick and Danny, like switching on and you're like, man, maybe I don't have it.
Yeah.
It's like, you have it, but it's just different levels,
yeah,
man.
It reminds
like,
me of an episode of, I forget the cartoon, but it was some Nickelodeon cartoon way back in the day, even though I was more of a Cartoon Network kid. There was a guy who was actually, you know what? I think it was Arthur, and it was the brain. And he was trying to accomplish as much as Einstein was, and he had a chart of all the things that Einstein did in a timeline, mm-hmm. and the brain tried to, like, match that, right? But then, lo and behold, he goes to this museum of Einstein, and he sees that same exact type of chart, but with Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah.
So it's like we're constantly seeing these people who are putting themselves out there at the highest level,
mm-hmm.
and we're always comparing ourselves. But we, at the end of the day, it is our own journey, mm-hmm. and it's good that we have those people to look up to and push ourselves. But ultimately, it's us that has to realize what are our limits, what are our goals, what can we break? Can we break mm-hmm. those limits? And I think that's something that, you know, Nick and Danny do very much do well.
And another thing is, I was just finished listening to Magnus Carlsen, who's a grandmaster chess, right? He went on Joe Rogan, and he's talking about, like, kids today have it so easy. It's like, there's kids who reach, like, these high levels of chess today that wasn't happening before because of the access to it that you have. And, mm-hmm. you know... I think it was either Einstein. I think it might have been Einstein that said, "We're standing on the shoulders of giants, right?" And the point being that there's all these people that did all this work for us to just like come in and take the fast lane. So even though we're, you know, putting in struggles and there's still like all this, you know, hard work that we have to put in, right? We're taking the fast lane by learning from everybody else's mistakes already.
Oh yeah. And it's funny you say that because I think about jiu-jitsu like this, because if you think about it too, the software of jiu-jitsu is so advanced now and we have a lot more younger people coming into the sport. And something that I always used to see a lot of is this idea that, you know, 20, like that you can start this sport at 20 and you can become a world champion at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And while, yes, I still think that can be possible, we can obviously see that that gap is closing because so many younger kids are coming into places like movement art, AOJ. Yeah. Now you can question AOJ about, you know, some of the stuff that they've done, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, the steroids with kids and stuff like that. But if they're coming into a place like movement art where they're just learning plain technique, that gap's starting to close for a lot of those people. And I can only imagine, like, people who used to be, like, college athletes or something like that that are looking to get into the sport. Maybe they didn't get into the NBA. And one sport I can honestly say, the only two I can think of that it's a low bar to entry and you can be wildly successful is jiu-jitsu and MMA, to be quite honest. You know
really?
What I mean? And by low bar, I don't mean like you can just walk in off the street and do that type of stuff. But if, let's say that you were a college athlete or you were a high school athlete, mm-hmm. you didn't make it into the NFL, you didn't make it into the NBA. Well, you already have those gifts to you. If you were to start training, I can guarantee you within at least 4 to 5 years, a lot of those people could make it into the UFC or could make it into...
I don't think so, man. I mean, I'm going to disagree with you on that one. There's so much competition when it comes to, like, the MMA world and everything. It's, like, it's not that easy, like, to get in there. Like, or, you know, there's so much competition. Just, like, within jiu-jitsu, to get to, like, the high, high levels, it is so competitive and it is so politicized and everything. Oh, yeah, and just, like, everything, you know? So, we can take the fast lane by, you know, learning from the best and doing, you know, this and that. But at the same time, it's like, we're not going to be like competing at the highest level. Maybe we will. No, who knows? But like at the same time, it's, I don't think that that's a true statement to just say, you know, you're a college athlete, you can start jiu-jitsu and have a fast track to, you know, high level.
I guess I was maybe like more of like a D1 type of deal, but yeah. I still think.
No, but even like Bo Nickel, right? Like he had a fight with Gordon Ryan, right?
Yeah.
And that didn't go so well.
That is true. But yeah. The thing is, the fact that he was able to get to that stage, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what I mean by the barrier of entry is like you can actually sign up and train with these type of people to learn that stuff if you're an athlete like that. That's kind of where I was. That's true. That's kind of where I was going at.
Yeah, that's true. There's no other sport that you can actually, like, basically, if you like soccer, you cannot just, like, basically walk into a gym and go train with, like, Messi and go train with, like, you know, some great soccer players, you know? Yeah. It's, like, where jiu-jitsu is, like, very available that is a true statement.
That's like, what I meant. Not, yeah. like, you're going to be a world champion or anything like that.
Yeah.
I meant
more then along we're on the same page,
of,
yeah. yeah.
I meant more along the lines of, like, if you were a college athlete and you were, like, a D1, maybe even D2, the barrier to entry and getting to that stage where mm-hmm. you can face those people.
Not necessarily face those people, though. That's where we disagree. I'm talking about just training.
Right. With well, people. Also, yeah, training and stuff like that.
Because it's like, you know, just, you know, you go to AOJ, you're training with Amandez. You go to Movement R, you train Nick and Danny. Oh, yeah. Right? Like, you can just go and like, basically, heroes of the sport are so accessible. And that's something that I think is very unique to jiu-jitsu. You
know? Yeah, especially because you need the mentality behind it to actually go through. Yeah. But you can, like, I didn't mean to say, like, going back to the previous point that we were agreeing on, that's kind of where I was more emphasizing it on, because you can go into those things, and you can go and compete. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying if you were an athlete, like a natural-born athlete, D1, D2 wrestler, or maybe even basketball player, and you were doing that type of stuff, the likelihood of it happening, I think, is greater than, let's say, some random Joe Schmo off the street coming in thinking he's going to be a world champion. Good luck with that. But it was more of like the lines of if you had that like super athletic background, it's a lot likelier of a chance. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's kind of what I mean by managing those type of goals into your own personal life is. I hope that kind of clears things up.
Yeah, no, that does.
Because I can already hear Danny and Nick like scolding me in the back with this one. Because I know they've done that to me before when I haven't executed my point like well enough.
It's fine. Anyway, yeah. I struggle with like, making words make sense, you know. That's part of the why I started this podcast. I just wanted to speak more, and I understand that, you know.
Yeah, it's actually one of the reasons I went sober too. Yeah. Like, because it helped me think a lot more things clearly, you know.
Congratulations! How many? You're 1 year now.
Yeah, a year as of February 1st.
Congratulations, man! That's a big milestone.
Yeah. Well, I intend to keep that going. Maybe when I'm 80 years old, I'll pick it back up again.
You know, might as well at that point.
Point, you know what? Let's bring back the 80. Like, yeah. I'm going to be 80. We're going to go full 80s. You know, like Pablo. Like, where are we at? You know what I mean?
So, what made you start? You know, this journey of like not drinking.
So it was originally I was going to go compete somewhere. around March. So I stopped drinking February 1st so I could help manage my weight. What ended up happening was I unfortunately experienced a death of a very good friend of mine. He was 27, 250 pounds of solid steel muscle. Died in his sleep. And just from there, I would be training. And I just, during that time, I was just training a lot, training and training. And as, you know, time went on, I think I was rolling with Dylan. And even though I was losing, I felt my mind was actually clear for the first time in a while. Because when I first joined Movement, I was going through some crap initially, which may have had an impact on how people originally perceived me there and whatnot. But when I started feeling that mental clarity, I was like, let me keep this going. And I was seeing my girlfriend at the time. We were, you know, friends at that point. And now her and I have been going a year strong as well. So that's been pretty cool. But I just started feeling more mental clarity. And Nick would always badger me about it. You know, he got me started on my new addiction of caffeine, and
trade one for the other.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, at least with caffeine, like, I'm awake and alert trying to do stuff. Yeah. And it's, I would argue, like, drinking some coffee, it's a lot healthier than downing, you know, liquid carbs the entire time.
Yeah.
So it was Nick that was one of the first people that brought it into my head, that put the seeds in. But then my buddy Vinny Marquez, he trains at Movement Art with us, brown belt. He kind of was the one that just really made it sink in. Because I would see a lot of kids like my age, going to college, at work and the sort. And they didn't really work out all the time. They may have had like good genetics. Like they may have had a fast metabolism. But you would just see they were 20 looking like they're 40. Maybe balding, some wrinkles and like... And Vinny was like, I see this in the office. Like, I don't want that to become you. And I kind of took that. I'm like, you know what? Maybe the things that Nick was saying about maintaining your health in that manner, getting rid of that type of stuff, what Danny even said very similar things to me, maybe there's a point.
Yeah.
So I just kept to it.
Not drinking is definitely, I mean, I'm not sober or anything like that. I'll drink a handful of times a year.
Yeah.
So, like, it's just sort of like a social thing, you know. But to me, it's not something that I can go out with friends. I can go to a restaurant and all this stuff and just pass out on, no, thank you. It's not attractive to me anymore where it used to be.
Oh, yeah.
I used to have a keg, like a tap, in my basement in my old house.
Right.
And that was a problem. Like, I was, like... drinking like it was like, oh, gotta cut the grass, oh, guess I'll have a beer, you know.
Yeah.
let me call some friends over, you know, let's have some beer.
That was,
you know, like every single day. And then also I used to work at a law firm.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very, very much like a culture there. Like, you went out to lunch every single Friday. We went to Chinatown. We had a beer. We had Chinese food. You know, it was like one of those. We went out with my manager. You're drinking. I remember one time we went out, and I was like, hey, can you order me an IPA? I'm going to go to a bathroom. And I go to a bathroom. I come back, and there's a Cosmopolitan sitting in my chair. And I was like, what is this? And he's like, ha. I downed the Cosmopolitan. Order an IPA, and that was lunch.
Jeez, you know? Louise.
And it was like one of those things that is like, man, that's not the end of it, all right? Every single month, there was parties at the rooftop of the law firm.
Oh, yeah.
And you're drinking. One day, it was a guy's last day, so we went out to drink for lunch. The manager's there. The VP is there. Everybody's drinking. As soon as the VP orders a second round, everybody else is ordering a second round. It's like 1 o'clock, 1:30. You had three beers in you, and you have to go back to work. And I'm just staring at my screen, not doing anything.
Yeah.
And then guess what? It was the same day as like one of those monthly parties. So there, and it's like, okay,
it's Groundhog Day.
4:30. Let's go. And it's like, you know, the whole day I'm drinking. And then I remember talking to an associate, and I'm slurring my words.
That's
and
not
I'm
good.
Like, this is not good. I gotta go home. And I went home. I took the train. I went home. And I was like, man, this is really bad. Then I switched jobs. And it was like a completely different. I noticed, like, man, this is bad. 2019, I was 250, 260 pounds. There was a picture that my wife just found the other day. She was like, were you really that big? Like, I cannot remember you being this big. And I was freaking whale, man. Like, it was all the drinking.
Oh, yeah. And see, the funniest thing is, like, I always say this about guys like yourself. I have another buddy who's, I think he went sober a little bit before he started jiu-jitsu, but he was also a guy that was big. And when he started jiu-jitsu, he slimmed the hell down. So that's why I always say, like, I know Danny and Nick are definitely going to disagree with me on this one, but I will say this until the, I will put my foot in the ground on this point. Jiu-jitsu is the secret fountain of youth. And I understand that some people, they age like, oh, humble about how, but I can't tell you how many people who are in their mid, late 30s, early 40s, even in their 50s, that once they start doing jiu-jitsu and they take it seriously, they look 10 to 15 years younger. It's ridiculous.
But a lot of it is diet. And I'll tell you, like, the first year that I started jiu-jitsu and all this stuff, like, yeah, I recomped, you know, maybe, like, but I was always, like, in that, like, 205, 210, you know, like, diet is huge, man.
100%.
And so, like, once I got my diet, like, dialed in, then it's like, okay, I started, like, slimming a lot more. And then people, like, are like, man, you're looking great, you're blah, like blah. It's that jiu-jitsu, right? It's like, no. It's like, yeah, jiu-jitsu is helping, definitely. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, for me, it's like, diet is the number 100%. One thing.
The amount of people who you'll meet, like when I was, because I used to be a chubby kid back in the day, and I watched a lot of what I ate almost to the point where I went anorexic. Like I went from 176 to like 135. Yeah, that was an experience, and that was through high school. But it does play a big role, and a lot of people, and it goes back to the drinking aspect of things. If you want to have a good, general, healthy life, ingesting poison like that is not going to be good. Like, I we can all, you know, joke around, especially nowadays, like, they're feeding the poison and all that type of stuff. You know what I mean? But seriously, like, at that point, you're just literally just drinking poison down the gullet. But I do have a funny story about IPAs, though, and it did happen recently. So my mother and I, we share a fridge. She has her alcohol in it. I have my energy drinks in. I bought, you know, the Gorilla Mind. I bought like one of the black cherry cans. It comes in a very black can. It's 5 a.m. I'm getting ready for my PT appointment. And I usually drink an energy drink in the morning. I grab the can. I go in my car. I pick up some breakfast. Eat my breakfast. Crack open the can. Drink it. Turns out I accidentally grabbed a triple IPA. I was like, this thing tastes like battery acid. Like, this is horrible. Like, it tastes like you ever smelt like caffeinated, like super, like you drank too much caffeine and you have to pee and it's like super yellow, but it smells. That's what
I'm sorry. I don't know.
Okay, just me.
But just you.
That smell was what this thing tasted like. And I used to drink IPAs all the time.
Yeah.
Completely lost a taste for it, and thank the Lord I have. That's 100%.
It's an acquired taste, I would say. Right?
Yeah, that's one way to put it. Like, it's like taking the red pill, like in the Matrix, and then you realize like what the real world is. You try the freaking thing again, and it's like, this is the worst thing I ever tried. What is this?
Yeah,
it's like taking sewage water.
So, I like whiskey. Yeah, like for me, right? And yeah, so it's very like. Fine, and you know, like my dad is like that too. Like he likes it. So sometimes, like we'll share something, you know. And one day, me and him, I was like, I got this new bottle, like want to try like a little bit. And so we put like a little bit, and he's like, yeah, you know, you can taste, you know, the barrel and all that stuff, and this and that. And we're talking, and my brother comes over, and he's not a whiskey drinker, and he's like, let me try. And he puts it in his mouth. He's like, oh my God, this is horrible. He's like, it burns.
Oh, yeah. No,
and I was like, don't just swallow it. You have to like kind of like let it like mellow in. He's like, you're telling me the thing that burns, I have to let it sit there long? It's totally not. He's not a whiskey drinker.
Yeah, so I had like, a buddy of mine. He used to drink, this was all the way back in college. So my friend at the time, he got like this big amount of money from his dad. Mm-hmm. And like any wise and good, responsible college student, he bought himself a bottle of Lagavulin, like the really peaty stuff.
Yeah.
And I tried it for the first time, and I thought I literally just ingested smoke into my body because the peat was so smoky. I'm like, what is this? Like, it was like it definitely woke you up, like better than any pre-workout I've ever taken, let me tell you. And it was also that same year where I also drank something, but it wasn't alcohol. Now, I don't think I ever told you this story.
Tell me.
True story. So when I was in college, I was at the University of Dayton. And one of the things you'll realize about me is I always find myself in the stupid predicaments by accident. Not really any drinking stories in this part, but just something stupid I've done. We go to this place called Jungle Gyms, and it's basically an international food market, and we go to the Turkish section, and I bought something that I thought was tea. Keyword is I thought was tea. So I brew it and I drink it. Tasted like cough medicine, and I was feeling a little woozy. So in my head, I'm thinking, oh, this must be one of those sleepy time teas. It was really working well, right? Turns out, my roommate looks at the thing, gives it to me. I accidentally brewed and drank hookah leaves.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so I had a very interesting visit at the health center that day, needless to say. But we survived. No nicotine poisoning happening. Yeah. Hence why I'm here talking to you today. So yeah, that was a wild experience, because I'm on the phone with my mom. She's like, go to the center now. This is serious. Like, this could have killed you. I'm like, all right, yeah, happens.
Yeah, I never had like one time I had like a bad like drinking kind of thing. Then, you know, it's a stupid story, but basically, in high school still, my buddy has a house. You know, he's already, like, grown up. And I was like, hey, can I borrow your house for a party? Yeah, so he's like, yeah, no problem. So I invite, like, all these girls, and I was like, yeah, let's go party at Jose's house. Awesome. You know, like, and all this stuff. There's going to be alcohol. At that time, the iPod just came out. So he had, like, an iPod with speakers. So it's like, we're going to be playing all the cool jams. There's going to be alcohol in there. You know, there's barely any furniture because he's a college guy. You know, like,
nice.
So it was, you know, it was going to be a good time. But I get there. Alcohol's gone. Oh, boy. iPod is gone. He is gone, and I'm just sitting there, like, with all these people, like, what the hell are we going to do?
Yeah.
And the only thing left was, like, a bottle of gin.
Oh, no.
So I call the guy up, and I'm like, what the, like, where are you? Where's the iPod?
What happened?
He's like, oh, I forgot it was today. Like my buddy came over, asked me if I wanted to go to AC, and so I just took everything with me. And he's like, sorry, I'll get you next time.
That was all your stuff, right? Too, right?
No, his stuff. But okay. Like, basically, in my head, like, it was going to be a good time because he, you know, it was going to be a quote-unquote great party, right? But I go to my house, well, my parents' house, steal my mom's like Smirnoffs and reunite wine, you know, and it was like, we got gin, Smirnoff, and some wine, you know, and all this stuff. We were playing cards, you know, this and that. And it was just like bad drunk. Like, the next day, my stomach was just like horrible, you know. It was like, oh, That was the worst.
Yeah. I bet, man. I remember one time when I was in South Korea, I was hanging out with, this is going to start like the sound of a bad joke. My buddy from the Netherlands, my buddy from Morocco, and a bunch of these people who were actually from Mexico. And we found the one Latin bar in South Korea. Not making it up, that's just where we went. And I got all the free drink cards because everyone else pre-gamed. So I, like a good American, had to catch up, right? 12 shots and a drink called the Mad Bulldog within the span of an hour and a half. I'm dancing on top of this pedestal and I feel and I feel this hand come up right beside me. I'm like, all right, this is fun, whatever, okay. I look over, it's this Kim Jong-un looking dude.
That's messed up.
I'm not even kidding, like it's this fat dude just groping me. I'm like, okay, karate chop his hand, and I sprint to the smoking section. And I go my buddy in my complete sober state, and I just go, bro, we gotta go. This guy's hitting on me. He goes, okay, man, we'll go. So we make it to the elevator, and I genuinely feel bad for the person who had to clean the elevator. Oh. Yeah, it was pretty bad. But the entire time I'm just sitting there hunched over with this, you know, this Mexican woman just rubbing my back going, he's okay, he's okay. But no, in all seriousness, I'm very lucky to have a very loving girlfriend, though, who has supported me through, like, in my sober journey.
Yeah,
like going through it, even though she keeps me accountable and I keep her accountable for other stuff too. And that's something also that,
dude, that's big, having the people, because, you know, we're laughing about it now, but like, it's like, these are horror stories, you know, like, oh, yeah. they're, you know, they like, it's sort of like, I don't know, my wife doesn't understand this, but basically it's like growing up, you know, like, we had a parent who beat us, you know, if we did something wrong and all this stuff. And nowadays, like, my brother and I, like, we tell stories and we laugh. Yeah. But it's like, it's fucking traumatizing.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, you got to take that trauma and laugh about it. And that's where I think where a lot of great comedy comes from. It's a mixture of looking back at the mistakes that you or other people have done to you in the past and finding the humor in it,
mm-hmm.
or just pointing out like an obvious thing,
mm-hmm.
and realizing the oddity of that. And then people are like, oh my God, I never thought of it that way. Like, that's one thing about like why I love watching comedy, like people like Tim Dillon, Theo Von, those type of people, like they're very good at doing that.
Yeah.
And I think it's very insightful. I love
comedy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, it's hilarious. Like when we were talking earlier, like, thank you, Nick Salas, for turning me on to caffeine now, because what was I telling you earlier? Like, one of the great side effects of caffeine is what?
Go to a bathroom.
Exactly. And depending on what you're drinking, you know, sometimes if you have a nice little cup of espresso, it's all natural. You're sitting on the toilet. You can hear the birds chirping, hear Pocahontas singing the Bloom Corn Moon and all that type of stuff. And you let a solid one out. You drink an energy drink and it's like, you know, the blast at Chernobyl, 25 kill streak and freaking Call of Duty and nukes about to drop. You know what I mean?
Is that what you brought me here?
I mean, that's
the Chernobyl bombs are going to come soon.
Here's the thing.
So we're going to cut this podcast.
But that goes with any energy drink. Like, you get the same thing with Ghost. You get the same thing with Celsius. For some odd reason, I feel like there's something with caffeine.
I go pretty regular and I'm all right. Like, I'm not blowing up any bathrooms anytime.
It could just be my genetics, and I try to become like a Nick Salas when it comes to caffeine, but my stomach is just not handled for it.
Yeah.
Then again, he's
made out of different material.
Not even kidding. I think he is Kryptonian. He's just from Krypton and we just don't know it yet. Because have you seen his lifting videos?
Dude. He used to bench like 400 pounds. Like
355 for reps. This kid. Like, it's insane. Like, yeah. This is what I mean. Like, people who are units like that. Like, you can be a unit like that and enter a sport and have some relative success. Like, there are people who are gifted like that out there.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
That's another level, man. That's
Him and...
And the level of obsession, right? Like, there's level of obsession. We kind of touched upon this on the podcast with him. But, like, basically, what is it that attracts, like, you know, neurodivergent people, you know, to jiu-jitsu? And it's, like, there's a slim, you know, piece of it that's, like, you know, the aspect of having social understanding with one another, like understanding people who are willing to kind of like bring you into their social circle. There's another one of like problem solving, right? And it's like, as a tech nerd here, it's like problem solving is definitely one of them. You know, then, you know, there's just another thing of just obsessive.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like this obsessive thing of like, I'm trying to get this right, right?
Well,
like,
what does Craig Jones say?
Yeah.
Like, if you want to be really... it kind of rings true, though, if you think about it. Like, if you want to, like, he says, if you want to be successful in the sport, aside from steroids, you need a strain of autism. You know what I mean? Like,
a little bit of autism and steroids, you know, will get you good at jiu-jitsu.
And that's another weird thing, too, because I grew up with Asperger's. Like, I was diagnosed in sixth grade. And one of the greatest things about jiu-jitsu is, like, you don't have a ball. You just learn how to manipulate the body and you can actually be relatively good.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the most beautiful things. And because of that too, you get a wide variety of people in jiu-jitsu. Like if you and I probably would have never met if it wasn't for jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And the fact that we have like that similar mentality, like of making sure that we're hyper-focused on this thing, like that hyper-fixation, which it is a part of autism as someone who grew up with it.
My kids.
Yeah.
Same thing.
So it is a big part of that because you need to learn how to focus in order to do anything in life, especially if you're hyper fixated on that one thing. You're going to be a genius at that one thing. Like, why do you think people like Elon are successful? Like, he admitted, I think, on what, Saturday Night Live that he had Asperger's before? You know, I think that's a big portion of it too. And you can see that with people even like Albert Einstein who are believed to have it. And the Mayal brothers who were rumored to have it or something like that. I know they joke about it with Mikey. He doesn't, but no, it's...
Yeah, there's just a level of it. Like, I don't know, that hyperfixation that, you know, like kind of like... I mean, my kid growing up, like it was diagnosed very early, both of them, you know, one more than the other in the sense of the spectrum, but... At the end of the day, is that hyperfixation of like something, and jiu-jitsu was the only thing that he took to. Like, we try to get him into like tennis and karate and basketball or anything like that. And it was just not, not really like linking. But jiu-jitsu was one of those that's like, okay, he enjoys it, he is taking to it, like he gets and like. It went like eaves and flows to it where, you know, now he's like completely obsessed with it.
Oh yeah.
He comes to me and he wants to train every single day and he's growing up and he's becoming like bigger. And now I just bought him new shoes. It was like, he's wearing the same size as me basically. Nice. Like, it's like, I got this big man now. And the other day I was like joking with my freestyle. Cause I was like, you know, like, it's like, why am I waiting to come to the gym to train when I have somebody at my house who's like, you know, this big man who's like always asking me to drill anyway.
Yeah, you made your own drilling partner, technically.
Yeah, no, but like he was benefiting off of this all the time because he's asking me questions and like he's drilling all the whole time. And I'm just like, let's drill, you know, and he's asking me questions and all this stuff. And then the other day I'm like, dude, I got to work on my back retention. Here, just go here, do this, you know, and all that stuff. And we're like drilling for like half an hour, like trying to like get better at this one thing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, man, I got it good too, man. Like now I have a drilling partner here every day, you know?
Yeah. So when did you start jiu-jitsu officially? Like when did you first put the gi on and come into class? Because I remember it was back at the old gym.
Yep.
But I'm pretty sure
it was like August 2021.
Ah, okay. So
no, 2022.
Okay, 2022. So man, you missed a really special time in jiu-jitsu when COVID was going around.
Yeah,
because me and Vinny, I had a buddy up in Plymouth Meeting. His name is Leo. Really, really nice guy. Super solid dude. Would always invite me over to come train at his place.
Mm-hmm.
And it was me, Leo, and Vinny. And we would just always like, just be training and drilling all the time during the COVID quarantines and all that type of stuff. So we really made that like a really tight-knit thing. And one of the things that we ended up doing because of that is like we try to make like a thing every single around Christmas to come over and like to his place and just, you know, drill some things out, or at least once a year go and see him.
Yeah.
Because like that really built like a really good bond. And now because we go to Movement Art, we can show this guy some really, really cool stuff. And he's like 60 years old, power lineman type of guy. Solid dude. It was a rough time for a lot of people. Don't get me wrong, yeah. But within every single rough time, there's always something beautiful and special that comes out of it. Like, yeah. Honestly, it was the COVID year. If it wasn't for COVID, I probably wouldn't be here right now for a plethora of reasons. But that was one of the greatest times of my life, just because there was so much introspection done in that time. So much self-work that was done in that time, to where I was having no success in my dating life.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have a girlfriend for a year. And all those skills, I made sure I learned them during COVID, and I landed this beautiful relationship. You know, were there some weird people involved? Sure. But if you're someone who's determined and looking for answers, and now you're kind of oddly blessed to have all this time on your hands because yeah. you're locked in your house, are you just going to sit there and like, you know, oh, I can't go out. I can't do this. I can't do that. I just work from home the entire time. Well, that's actually like, as rough as that is, it's a blessing at the same time, because you actually now have more free time to work on yourself. You can maybe listen to a podcast. You can listen to an audiobook. You can even read a book right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm right now reading Thomas Paine's Common Sense right now because a buddy of mine bought it for me.
Nice.
And if it wasn't for COVID and having like all that stuff kind of lifted off and having to commute to work back and forth, there's so much more free time now than people realize because of what happened during that time where they can learn that self-improvement stuff.
Yeah. No, I mean, you listen to any of the podcasts that I have here and they're all like self, you know, like, progression kind of like basically things that I do, and I'm a huge believer in that. Like all the books that I read, all the things that I, you know, basically do are to self-improve. And you know, that's definitely big for anybody to do, because it doesn't take that much time, and understanding that, you know, that you don't have to go obsessive to the wall, like basically doing all that. But at the same time, like incremental progressions are the way to get better at anything.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like for me, that was huge, because I used to get to the point where I get so obsessive over something, like it would cut into other stuff. And that was bad. Like when I first started getting into like lifting and all this stuff, like 2012. You know, like I got into lifting and I got so obsessed with it and all the stuff. Then I had like an injury. Then I came back and I looked at my logs and I was like, oh, I was doing this for that. And I thought I could just pick it up where I left off.
You can't do that. That's a good way to get hurt.
And I got like really, really hurt. And then it was like, okay, then I'm out. And then it's like, okay, I'm done with that. And then like I got into running and then I was like, that's all I'm going to do. And I signed up for like 5Ks. I signed up for 5 miles. I signed up for like 10 miles, marathons, all that. Like I got so like into it that I was like, that's all I'm going to do now.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, like 6 months later, a year later, it's like, nope, I'm done now. You know, it's cycling, same thing. It's yeah. like, I get so obsessed over stuff that's like, and then I leave it because I get hurt. And I go too deep into it, not thinking. But then it's like, once I got into like cycling and all the stuff, that's when I was like, oh, like after that, it's like, I don't have to go out there and, you know, like be all in. Like I'm not going to be
you're not, you know, doing
the Tour de France, right? Like all this stuff. But I had the bike for it.
Yeah, you had the bike.
So it was like one of those things that it's like, yeah. Like I shouldn't be spending $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000, you know, on the bike or whatever it is.
You don't need it. I don't need that, right? Put it this way, you're not losing a nut over it, right?
Yeah. That's where you're wrong. Have you ever cycled for 100 miles, my friend?
Gotta be more aerodynamic, right?
No, I'm just saying, like, sitting on the saddle for 8 hours or 7 hours or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it goes numb down
there. I bet it does. I bet it does, yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, within those time periods, too, it's not like you're also, like, focusing on how you can come back. Like, you're actually putting some time in. Like, if you're taking, like, that time of injury off and you're studying, mm-hmm. let's say, collar sleeve, or you're studying spider lasso, or you're studying barambolos, like you can take that time when you are injured to put those things in, so you actually have a list to do when you come back, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but like I'm saying, like, even though, like, yeah, I train a lot, you know, and all this stuff, I'm actually pretty regulating, you know, my time, because I'm not going all out, I'm not being obsessive to the point that I get injured, you know, and all this stuff.
Being healthy with it.
I get injured anyway, because, you know, the sport is the sport, right? Like, right. You're not there pillow fighting. You're choking and breaking arms and doing all kinds of stuff.
If you're
right?
pillow fighting in jiu-jitsu, that'd be a lot more weird.
Yeah,
that's more of like a Craig Jones vibe. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, but at the same time, yeah, like I'm not really going out all out. That is affecting my family time or anything else, right?
Yeah, it's like you're not scrolling, but you're also not scrolling
exactly,
on
right?
there, just looking at babies getting hit with cheese, which was, I don't know why
that
was
a great
thing.
Trend.
Like, you remember that? Like,
just throwing cheese to babies, like,
yeah,
all the
like
time.
Just throwing cheese to babies to calm them down. Like, I can only picture RFK. Why are you throwing the cheese at the children? It's filled with plastic and dairy. It's not good for the children. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand why it was a thing, because I was thinking about this earlier today. Like, I don't know what it is. What is your opinion on dairy? Like, on, like, cheese?
So, the conspiracy side of me, right? I heard that the dairy lobbyists got themselves in order to get into the five main groups, and it doesn't really, you don't really need it, like,
yeah.
Like there's that side of me, like, I don't know for sure, but I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah.
But I'm lactose intolerant, but I love ice cream.
Oh, I like ice cream too.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know,
it's one of those love hate relationships.
Yeah, that's when I hear the bombs of Chernobyl in my bathroom, you know.
Good to hear. Incoming!
Yeah,
exactly.
That's when, you know, things go south, literally.
Oh, yeah. Because one of the biggest things I find interesting, because when I was a kid, I was a very picky eater. I went to South Korea and I had, like, the octopus tentacle thing that was still moving.
Yeah.
Had silkworms. But the one thing I'm always picky with is cheese.
Yeah. As far as, like, good quality cheese versus a slice of cheese.
Of like what goes on what? Because the only three cheese I accept are mozzarella, cheddar, orange cheddar. It has to be orange. None of this fake Cooper Sharp type of stuff. It looks like plastic.
I like sharp cheddar.
Provolone. It's one of those three. It can't be any
what
of the
about
other
sharp
types.
Sharp provolone.
Maybe I could do sharp provolone. Colby Jack is a questionable one for me, but
sharp provolone is so good. Like on the arugula salad, like some sharp provolone, money.
See, you want to know something else that's weird?
What?
I don't like dressing on salad.
I didn't say dressing. I just said cheese.
No. I know what you're talking about. You mentioned salad, but just to emphasize like the picky eater part. Yeah. Like I don't even do that type
so
of stuff.
So my son is like, you know, I got two boys who are like, you know, I wouldn't say picky eaters. Like I got a picky eater who's like, you know, will eat regular stuff and all that. But then I have the other one who's the older one who can go to a French restaurant, eat, you know, some escargot, which is snail.
Yeah.
but won't eat eggs, or at some point he wasn't eating rice. Like, he's like, I don't want rice. Now he's back on eating. But, like, basic stuff, like cereal, he's like, oh, no, hell no. Right?
Yeah, no, I got you. Because it's also funny, I never was one to put milk in cereal as well. Like, for some odd reason, I never liked milk and cereal. I never really liked milk that much either.
Yeah. Milk is good. But, again, lactose intolerant. So.
Yeah. See, I never got I never developed
taste for it. But I don't pay attention to it. It's one of those things that's like, yeah, I'll eat it anyway. I'll deal with the consequences later. It's like you and energy drinks. I'll drink it anyway, right?
Exactly. Exactly. That's how it goes. But it's just funny because, like, I can, like... It's one of those things because, like, with certain cheese, like, for instance, on a burger, it has to be yellow cheddar. If it's American, looks disgusting.
Do you ever just eat cheese just
sometimes, by itself? Yeah. So I'll have usually, like, cheddar, or the only white cheese I will eat.
Provolone.
Is provolone. Well, actually, I messed one up. There's actually one extra one. And that's the... I forget what it's called, but it's the one with all, like, the hot peppers in it.
Jack?
Yeah.
Pepper jack?
Pepper jack cheese. I'll have pepper jack because it has, like, that spice in it. Now, I love spicy food, too.
Dude, I love spicy
food. But I'm no Nick Salas.
Yeah. Oh, dude. We already established. Nick Salas is an alien. Like, we don't need to.
But
he eats the spiciest food. He eats the most food. He drinks the most caffeine, lifts the most weight. Like, he's just another level.
Okay, so I'm wondering if you saw this happen, because I'm wondering if you were at the gym when this happened. Do you remember when Nick brought in the hot sauce, the bomb?
There's a couple times where he brought in spicy stuff, and just, like, it's hilarious to watch people.
So I remember we...
It's the worst hot sauce of all time, by the way. Like,
oh, yeah. So, something that truly happened. We're at the middle of rolling at the old gym, and he brings the bomb. And I remember him earlier saying, bring something that will help settle, like, you know, the calmness down, right? So, it was me, Thick Neck Mike, and some other people. Thick Neck Mike. Yeah,
Mike. You don't even need to say. I know.
Yeah. No, of course. Because Bull's got that neck, though. He's got that good genetic neck, man. Love him. Really nice kid too. He has us eat this hot sauce, and then we roll afterwards. Oh my god, one of the worst experiences ever. Because I'm just there, just trying to eat like a protein cookie. He's outside, like, just eating cream cheese and stuff like that. I'm like, this is so bad.
I'll tell you a story. I was at an office one day, and somebody brought in, like, I think it was Carolina Reapers or whatever. Some pepper, you know, that was, like, really, really spicy. And everybody's like, oh, eat it. So I like, go take a bite out of it. You know, it's like, dude, it's spicy. But I like spicy food too.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, this thing is spicy. Oh, yeah. And it's like, yeah. So we got a buddy who's like, yeah, I don't do spicy, right? And we're like, come on, like peer pressure, everything like that. What happened? Right. And we're sitting in the office here, and he takes a bite. And he's like, he's like, water. I was like, don't drink water.
It's gonna make it worse.
I was like, go to the cafeteria and get some milk, right? And then he goes to a cafeteria, he's like, milk, I need some milk.
he needs some milk.
Yeah, right? Like, and they're like, we don't have any milk. Like, we got the creamers. So they're the little shots of creamers.
Oh, that's amazing.
And he's like literally popping them and taking shots of creamers, like, you know, like, and he's like, this is, I hate you guys. Why'd you guys make me do this?
Actually, okay.
Shout out Hector.
So I actually got, okay, I might have one that tops that.
Okay, go ahead.
So it wasn't Carolina Reaper, but I brought in, this was back in high school, my freshman year. I brought in pure capsaicin in one time. And I'm giving it to some of my buddies. They're having it, you know, they're running it around because it's so freaking hot, right? So the guy, this one dude, he takes it, puts it on this deaf girl's plate,
Oh,
it's okay.
This is so wrong.
It's, no,
my head. I'm sorry, my head.
You know why it's okay? You don't know why this is okay?
No,
because it's a story of karma, actually.
Okay, go ahead.
So he puts it on her plate. She tries it. It's like it looks like straight black goo from Harry Potter that's gonna, you know, possess you. She's running to the water fountain. He closes the bottle. What we didn't know is that he had a little bit of residue from the capsaicin on his fingers.
Goes to the bathroom. Oh. He wipes his eyes.
Wipes his eyes. In 5 seconds, he is sprinting out on the floor crying. Just absolute like, what? Like. The kid couldn't dilate his pupils for a week.
He deserved it.
Yeah, I felt bad for bringing it, and I did get into some trouble because I brought that, but it is what it is. I mean,
dude, I was cooking, and I don't usually cook with peppers or do spicy stuff at home. It's mostly like pie something or put the hot sauce on whatever, you know, I'm eating. This time I was cooking, and I'm cooking with, like, jalapenos, which is, you know, not bad at all. Not bad at all. But I didn't think about this. Mid-cook, I'm like, I need to go to the bathroom. And I just go to the bathroom. And I'm, like, sitting there, I'm like, this is not a good idea. I know what's happening. And this is really, really bad.
you just come back into the room. It's just straight tear gas.
Oh, no. Like, I'm holding, like, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Dropping a nuke.
And, yeah, I come out and I'm just like, oh, that stinks.
Literally.
And it was like, this is really bad. And then it's like starting to like get really, really bad. And I'm like contemplating, do I just get like a cup of milk and like dip it in there? Like what do I do? Like, this is like, how do I deal with this? This is horrible.
Oh man, you know what the worst ones of those are? Like when you're driving back home and it's like you can feel the dam about the brake and you're just lifting yourself on the top of the car.
Yeah,
you're
but
just
that's
trying to.
Yeah, this was like, you know.
It was a sudden one, yeah.
Yeah.
Those are the worst, man. Those are really, really the worst. Yeah. I remember I had back before I got my license, I was doing some intern work for a city councilman in Philadelphia. And I'm on the bus, and I had kimchi that day. And it was one of those type. And I'm on the bus, and I just go off at the stop. There was a church that was open, like, you know, maybe the Holy House would be open. But it wasn't, so I knock on the church directory things. I'm like, I gotta go real bad, and you know, by the blessed God, I, you know, holy shit, you know, it was, it was great. Can't complain.
My brother has a. All right, this is a funny one. So my brother used to work construction, and like he was working at this one place next to a church. And, you know, the church would let them use the bathroom and all this stuff.
Good Samaritans.
And he one time goes to the beeline to the bathroom. He comes back. He's like, I think I killed all my angels. Like, they all left the room. He's like, it was bad.
Oh, man. Oh, man. I've had some bad ones where it's like. Oh man, I remember one time my girl and I we went to a teammate's wedding of mine in North Carolina the one time. And I'll tell you, man, we talk about your diet and stuff like that. Sometimes you get one of those Wawa hoagies and you realize why that shouldn't be eaten. they had the Jason Kelce special.
Yeah. What is that?
It was like a Wawa hoagie with like some special hot peppers and other type of stuff. Jason Kelce, football player for the Philadelphia Eagles. He retired. Big dude. Reason why he's probably in a lot of Wawa commercials. Man likes to eat. And I had the thing. And dude, I backshot at the back of the toilet so bad. Like, girl goes in there. She goes, it's still not going. I'm like, I'm sorry, babe. There's another story that goes with that, but that'll have to be after after the recording. But still, it's a pretty good one, though. It's a pretty good one.
Dude, with that, let's wrap it up, man.
Sounds good, brother.
Where can people find you?
AutomaticoBJJ. You know, got my Instagram up there.
Follow this man.
Maybe
good inspiration. Not all toilet talk. You know, I promise.
It was just the last part, I promise.
Just the last part.
I used to have a podcast, but my buddy Vinny's trying to make me bring it back up again. So who knows? Might come back.
We'll collab, man.
Sounds good. All right, dude, brother.
It's been great talking to you.
You too, man.